Okay, let's call EMWD's Board of Directors meeting to order, time being 9 o'clock, April 17th, 2019. Steve, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I will. Please place the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
April, do we have any guests?
Yes, we have Monique Farquharson from DPFG, and we have our team for Webb and Associates.
Oh, okay, terrific. Okay, this being the time for any public comments, anybody wishing to speak to the board for anything that's not on the agenda, seeing no hands raised and no cards, we'll go to General Manager's Report.
Thank you, President Sullivan. Members of the board, good morning.
Good morning.
In the package, in your board package, is my report. I just want to highlight a few things. I've reported to the board previously that the Environmental Protection Agency is putting together a national action plan on water recycling. I think this is a significant milestone. EPA has really never weighed in, and the current director of the Office of Water, Dave Ross, is very interested and has actually a background in recycling and is very interested in seeing what the federal government do to provide regulatory relief, funding in other areas to advance water recycling nationally. So they announced that they're putting together this action plan. The Water Use Association has stepped in partnership with EPA to put together two full-day workshops that are going to be facilitated by the Meridian Group. They're going to focus on federal government's role in advancing water recycling for municipal and ag irrigation, on-site recycling, industrial reuse, and potable uses. The help sponsor the workshops, Water Reuse, has partnered with National Association of Clean Water Agencies, Water and Environment Federation, and AWWA. And that first workshop is going to be tomorrow in Los Angeles. There's 52 invitees. Easter is going to be present and participating in the workshop. There'll be a second workshop in Virginia, which we will not participate on May 9th. The culmination of the workshop will be a list of recommendations and a short report that then EPA can use to formulate their plan. I think the idea is we did not want EPA to go off and do this kind of independently. We wanted to bring kind of the best experts in the country together so the plan is relevant and it can help with funding and other things that we need for water recycling. So I think this is good news and it's going in a good direction. Under our past and ongoing activities, the district's bill SB 414 that we co-sponsored with the California Municipal Utilities Association has made it through two of its principal policy committees, the Government and Finance Committee on March 27th and Senate Environmental Quality Committee on April 3rd. It was both voted out of both of those committees on unanimous vote, 7-0 votes for both of them. We're doing some minor positive amendments to the bill right now. It's headed over to the Senate Appropriations Committee. It will be heard there on April 22nd. The process is usually it's put in the suspense file, and then leadership decides how to vote bills out of the suspense file to put on the floor of the Senate. To date, we have 34 registered supporters of the bill, and we have five oppose unless amendment positions put on the bill, and those are environmental justice organizations. Their concerns with the bill is they feel it's complex, and also they don't like the fact that the bill requires that the state board take certain actions in a fairly expeditious manner. They're concerned about resources there. So we're working with those entities to try to get them those issues resolved, but we think there's very strong support for the bill at this point. Other items of interest to the board, one of the things we've talked about frequently is the restrictions on our ability to test emergency generators because of the AQMD and CARB restrictions. We're working with a coalition of 30 agencies to request that the California Air Resources Board amend its air toxic control measure rule to allow additional flexibility for testing generators, particularly generators, and this has really come out of in Las Virgenes Municipal Water District during the fires, the Malibu fires. They had issues with their generators. Then they cited some of the problems with that associated with not frequent enough testing. There is the National Fire Protection Association has criteria for testing emergency generators. That applies to private sector but does not afford it the same latitude for public agencies. So the request for the change at the California Air Resources Board is to amend that rule to allow that for public agencies who provide fire protection services. This will also be coordinated with the South Coast Air Quality Management District. A similar request had been made. They basically pointed to CARB and said CARB needed to act on this to provide some guidance. So we're working with this coalition of 30 agencies to push that forward. On our groundwater replenishment activities, good news on that. Jeff and his staff have done a great job restoring the integrated recharge and recovery ponds. We're currently recharging about 25 cubic feet per second of imported water. Year to date, we've got about 1,800 acre feet of water, imported water in the ground, with about 2,260 remaining to get to our 7,500 acre foot average under the Saboba settlement. And that's because we had water that was pre-delivered last year. However, if we continue to recharge at the current rate and Met has water available, we estimate we'd be able to get over 22,000 acre feet of water in this year. So we'll work towards that objective. Staff also is working on restoring the Grand Avenue ponds. The Grand Avenue ponds, one of the key things we need to look at there is the diversion channel, the gate in the diversion channel that diverts stream flow into the ponds. That was pretty much taken out by the floods. So we're working through the regulatory permitting process to be able to reestablish that channel so we can divert next year to the Grant Avenue ponds. But we were able to get some water in the ground from the Grant ponds before the floods. We got about 1,463 acre feet. So we continue to aggressively put water into the ground. One of the things we talked about previously is Met has substantial surplus water. Jeff will give a report later on, but they took to their board on April 9th a new program, to encourage the capture of surplus water through in-lieu means. Specifically, this would be if you're pumping groundwater or you're drawing out of a reservoir, you would curtail doing that to back water up into the groundwater basin or into the reservoir, and they would give you a payment to make you financially neutral. That payment is up to $225 per acre foot. So that program was officially approved. We're looking what we can do in the San Jacinto Basin. We've also been working very closely with Rancho California Water District. They're looking at, they have an existing cyclic storage account, which is a different program which allows them to take raw water. But they're also looking at doing an in-lieu program. As it turns out, the connections they would use, the service connections for the in-lieu program, would be through Western. So there'll be coordination with Western, Eastern, and Rancho on how they want to take water, but it looks like they want to take it under their existing agreement and under the new in-lieu program. So we'll work with them very carefully on that. Finally, I want to report and give the board an update on the potential Niagara water bottling facility that we considered in the region. We've had the opportunity to brief President Sullivan on this, but Niagara is currently looking at two potential sites in our service area, and I think they're also looking outside of our service area. But the two sites they're looking at, one is in the city of Menifee, and one is kind of off of Cahalco in the Mead Valley area, just off of the freeway. The facilities they're looking at would be constructed in two phases, and of course, it's a water supply treatment and bottling plant. The first phase would be 1.1 million gallons a day, so a fairly large consumption, and the second would go up to 2.85 million gallons per day. So we've been working with Niagara, providing them information on connecting to our system capacity, also provided them a calculation of our financial participation charges. That's a big number because of those demands. There's huge demands on the system. So they have questioned the calculation. What we offered was to reconcile that issue by engaging a third-party independent consultant to review that. They've agreed to that. They're going to pay the initial expense for that. It's fairly inconsequential, the amount. It's not very costly. And then if they ultimately locate in the service area, we would credit them back a portion of that money, 50% of that money, towards their fees. But we think this will get this issue reconciled one way or the other. We think a study, once we execute an MOU with Niagara, will take about 4 weeks, and then we can complete our negotiations with Niagara at that time. But I know the city of Menifee is very interested in this because of the potential job creation. And so we'll continue to work with Niagara to see if this can be located in our service area. And with that, are there any questions on my report?
Nope.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Laura.
Nothing this week.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Been on vacation.
Joe.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. I wanted to share with you that Mark Serna, our Director of Engineering, has accepted a position of Chief Engineer with the South Coast Water District in Orange County. So, regretfully, he'll be leaving us as of April 25th. We will be moving forward with replacement for that position. And we wanted to wish Mark all the best in his new endeavor. That's it.
You bet. Mark's been a great servant here. So, Jeff.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just wanted to report real briefly. Monday morning, we experienced a leak on our 36-inch recycled water line just about less than a mile north of the office here. It's between Ellis and the Senesino River. Historically, we've had, in recent years, two other leaks on that same pipeline. As a result, engineering has engaged consultants to help us put together a project to basically replace a segment of that pipe. We actively have a contractor out there right now working to install anode bags or anodes on that system to further protect it or ensure it doesn't continue to corrode at a bad rate. I'm bringing to your attention just that we did get a couple complaints on Monday from fluctuating pressure. We had to isolate that line, which basically brings all the water from Reno Valley, prevent that stop of water north of the leak, and so it's basically bifurcated our system, and that's why we're seeing the fluctuating pressures. Other than a couple low pressure issues, it's nobody's out of water, so that's the good news. Pretty confident in looking at the pictures from the construction site that it's basically an area where there's a lot of alluvials, standing water, high chloride content. This is a pre-stressed pipe, a wire around the pre-stressed pipe, and the concrete or the mortar over the wires is gone, which is indicative of chloride, so that's pretty confident that's the case. But anyhow, we will be putting together a project for future consideration of the board to replace a segment of that line, probably on the order of a half mile or something like that. I'm not entirely sure at this point, but again, just want to bring it to your attention.
Okay, thank you.
And I would also add, it will be back in service by the end of today.
What size line is it?
36.
Oh,
that's a big line.
No kidding. Okay. With that, we'll accept the motion and a second for approval of items 3A through 3L, unless anyone wishes to.
I would like to point out, Director Sullivan, item 3C on the consent calendar is being deferred until our next meeting.
Right.
I'll make a motion to move the remaining items on the consent calendar.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously with Director Slauson and record absent. Go to the action calendar number 4A, which is approve and authorize agreements with Kennedy James Consultants for $145,730 and Woodward and Curran for $158,158 for the Paris North Basin implementation plan and appropriation of $374,000. Brian.
Thank you, President Sullivan and members of the board. This slide here shows the Paris North Sub-Basin, which is a sub-basin of the San Jacinto groundwater basin, and it includes includes the majority of the cities of Moreno Valley and North Paris. This is where our North Paris groundwater basin program is located. And as you know, there's been rising groundwater in the area. We initially looked into this as a way to help the MARB base deal with rising groundwater underneath the base. We initiated a program that would take into account all of the water that could be leading toward the rising groundwater around the base. So, as you can see in this figure, we have proposed facilities up in the Moreno Valley area, just north of the base, just east of the base, and just south of the base. The target flow for this program would be 6,700 acre feet. It would involve about 9 groundwater production wells, pipelines, and treatment facilities. So we were looking to the Air Force to be a partner on this and to provide some funding, but then along came Proposition 1, and we saw this as a good potential because our program fits real well within the scope of this grant. So last year we submitted a concept proposal, which was a 5-page letter summarizing our proposed program. And they accepted concept letters from a number of different agencies for their projects. And then they decided which ones they felt were worthy of receiving the grant funding. And ours was selected. So then earlier this year we submitted a full application. And the grant request amount was $36 million, and that would provide about 50% of the funding for the program. So it's a relatively large program, about $72 million. We've received a number of support letters, about a dozen, some very influential support letters, so I'm hoping that that's going to push us over and help us get the full amount. But if we get even a good chunk of it, we'll get a good win for the district. The timeline for the grant, we're expecting to receive notification in the summer of this year. That may be a little optimistic on the state board side, but nevertheless, we're hoping to get an agreement, if not finally, that we can achieve before the end of the year. There is a deadline for eligible costs, and that's the middle of 2023. So we don't have a lot of time, so we're hoping to move the planning efforts forward at this time so that we're ready to move with the program in whatever format it comes out in, depending on how much money that we get from the grant. If we get the full amount, we can move the full program forward. And so we need to be ready to go with CEQA and preliminary and final design as quickly as we can. So the scope of this phase of the work, which we're calling the implementation plan, includes siting of wells and other facilities, also looking at pipeline alignments. We need to have optional alignments for CEQA. And then we also need to do some groundwater modeling to make sure that any production that we do does not disrupt the mitigation going on at MARC. And so we negotiated contracts with Kennedy James and Woodard and Curran to complete the various phases of this scope of work. So our recommendation is to approve and authorize execution by the general manager of the contract with Kennedy James in an amount not to exceed about $146,000 and a contract with Woodard and Curran for an amount not to exceed about $158,000. And appropriation of $374,000 to fund these contracts and staff time. Any questions?
Any questions?
I'll make a motion to move the item, Mr. President.
I would second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Slauson absent. Go to 4B, which is approve and authorize the West San Jacinto and Southwest San Timoteo groundwater basin boundary modifications.
Good morning, President Sullivan.
Good morning.
This is on the boundary modification and pretty much an update of the results. So the sustainable... Sorry. Sustainable Groundwater Management Act for 36 months. I passed in California in December 16, 2014. And the purpose is for the management of our groundwater basins so that we don't generate undesirable results. High and medium priority basins need to be governed by a groundwater sustainability agency, and SGMA has granted new authorities for the GSAs. In 2016 and 2017, the MWD's board of directors approved two resolutions to become the GSA for the western portion of the San Jacinto Basin and also the southwest portion of the San Jacinto sub-basin. So, California groundwater basins are defined by the Department of Water Resources, and the San Jacinto Basin is a high priority basin. The San Jacinto sub-basin was recently reprioritized to a very low priority basin. And then also, SGMA has established a process for the GSAs to revise the boundaries to better represent the extent of the saturated alluvial groundwater aquifer. So in June 2018, we submitted two modification packages to the Department of Water Resources. Just to orient you, the green is the pre-modified San Jacinto groundwater basin. So, and then to the northeast is the San Jacinto sub-basin. So this was before the modification request. So based on the modification results, the area that represents the southwest San Mateo GSA area is no longer in the basin, as well as it is no longer within EMWD's sphere of influence, and so the district cannot be the GSA for this area. And then because of the very low priority ranking of the basin, the Groundwater Sustainability Plan is now required by the Department of Water Resources. So this is what the modified boundary of the San Jacinto sub-basin looks like. And as you can see, the area that was southwest San Jacinto GSA area is no longer part of the basin. And this was approved by DWR this year. For the San Jacinto basin, the areas in green represent areas that were requested modifications. So we've worked really closely with the Hammond San Jacinto Water Master for the area on the east side, since the Hammond San Jacinto area is managed by the Water Master. And so we propose, based on scientific justification, to really hone in on the management for the basin, since Eastern is the GSA for the western portion. And all the areas beside the area around Lake Paris was approved, which was a little shocking to us, but in any event, it's going to be included in the basin. And so this figure represents the revised boundaries of the San Jacinto groundwater basin. So the blue area is a revised West San Jacinto GSA area, and so that will be managed by EMWD's board of directors. And on the east side, management is by the Hammond San Jacinto Water Master. To the northwest, we have this Western San Bernardino adjudication, and Marsh Air Reserve Basin is exempt from SGMA requirements. This was approved earlier this year as well. And so our recommendation is that the general manager amend the resolution 2016-135 to revise the West San Jacinto GSA area to reflect the revised boundaries approved by DWR, as well as to rescind resolution 2017-050 and withdraw EMWD as a Southwest San Jacinto GSA from San Jacinto State. Any questions?
I have
a
recommendation.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
Motion carries unanimously with Director Slauson and record absent.
Thank you, Rachel.
This is the first time she's presented to the board.
Right.
Did a very nice job.
Well, she also headed up the technical work to work with DWR to make these amendments in the hydrogeologic work and did an excellent job. So, thank you, Rachel.
Gordon.
Morning.
Good morning.
Today, I'm here to present water supply assessment for two projects that are coming in Menifee, and this will be actually items C and D on the action calendar. And so just in quick background, under SB 610 and 221, water supply planning and land use planning gets integrated by having the lead agency request a water supply assessment as part of the CEQA process. And if a project meets certain size requirements, the relevant requirement for these two projects is that both of these projects are over 500 dwelling units in size. And what the water supply assessment does is it correlates the projected demands from the project to the projections that were made in our management plan under various scenarios, namely an average, single dry year, and multiple dry year. So the first project is the Menifee Valley specific plan. It's over 2,700 residential units. It's located just down the street. It's south of Highway 74. It's bounded by Menifee Road to the west, Briggs Road to the east, and Matthews Road to the south. This is near where Heritage High School is. There is some CII, commercial and institutional components to this project, and the developer is Brookfield Residential. And in the urban water management plan, when we looked at this back in 2015, 2016, the land use that we looked at was generally consistent with this project. There's a little bit of increased density in this project because it went from kind of primarily medium density residential to some medium and high density residential. This table shows kind of the comparison of the demand estimate as we see it today based on the materials that they submitted versus what we looked at in the urban water management plan. And so there's a slight increase in the demands that were projected, but due to lower than expected growth overall in the district, we're actually still well within the capacity of the estimates that we made in the urban water management plan. So it's not something that we're really concerned about. And then the other project that requested a water supply assessment is Palomar Crossings, and this is also located in the city of Menifee. It's actually really close to the Menifee Valley Specific Plan. It's located northwest of the prior project. It's north of the Highway 74, and Menifee Road is the eastern boundary of the project, with Palomar Road being the western boundary. And this is over 700 units of very high density residential, and the developer is Mike Nagar and Associates. So when we looked at the urban water management plan projections, there was a change in the anticipated land use back in 2015. When we looked at this, it was anticipated to be business park and light industrial, and obviously they're changing to residential use. There was a commercial aspect of the land use in 2015, and that is staying consistent. There's also a little bit of commercial retail as part of this development. So there is an increase in demand compared to the urban water management plan, but again, we have sufficient capacity in the urban water management plan due to lower than expected growth. So this is still well within just the capacity that's available. And then just to kind of put these projects in context, we track, a large number of EDUs as part of our just annual planning efforts and analysis, and we do projections for the water supply that we're going to need. We'll account for this growth when we update our next urban water management plan, and yeah, the capacity is available, and it's ultimately a small percentage of the anticipated development in our service area. So our recommendation is to approve the water supply assessment for both the Menifee Valley specific plan and for Palomar Crossings.
Can we take both items as one motion?
Okay, it's if you so choose.
Okay, so I'll move items C and D on the action calendar.
All
set. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Slauson absent. Agenda item 4E, which is approved and authorized. An agreement and environmental science for environmental with Environmental Science Associates for $2,009,553 for the Getz Road Tank and Pipeline Project, the Environmental Impact Report, and appropriation of $209,553. Court, or Al.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
It's all good. Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to present the Getz Road Tank Pipeline Environmental Impact Report. Just to get you more oriented where the Getz Road tank is located. It's along Getz Road, and to the north of that, actually to the east will be the 215 freeway. To the north will be McLaughlin, and then to the south will be McCall. It's along the ridgeline of the mountains to the west there. This is going to address water storage and the transmission needs for pressure zone 1627. The proposal is for a 2 million gallon tank to be constructed on a 2.8-acre parcel owned by TMWD. This also includes pipelines, which is about 5,490 feet, that will go along 14th Avenue and that will connect to the area. This is a better example of what where the tank is located, as well as the alignment. It's the alternative alignment number 7 that is preferred for this proposal. Now, this is a continuation of the CEQA project that occurred in October 2015. The initial CEQA was at the ISM&D for a 13.4 million gallon tank and pipeline. When this went out, there was 9 comments received. It was opposition to the tank, primarily for the impact on the view and the impact of the residents that are going to be impacted along the bottom of the tank location. So in November 2015, we switched to an EIR. Notice of preparation was also given out. And then we received comments from public agencies, again, the impacts of the view, the shadows, risk of tank failure, construction-related noise, inconsistent with biological requirements were also commented on there. Additionally, there was questions asked about was this appropriate tank siting. So from 2016 to 2018, the prepared an additional tank siting as well as hydraulic analysis. From there, what was obtained was this was the best location to provide the tank. Additionally, that the storage would be split between the Sun City tank and the Guest Road tank, downsized to an 8 million gallon tank. This year in January, we released an RFP preparation for the EIR. And what we did is we selected and requested from 2 vendors that were already in our as-needed list. They were large firms, and we were very familiar with their work, and so we requested the RFP from them. Proposals were reviewed and ratified by the Engineering and Environmental Services staff. EA was selected as the vendor of choice. Helix was cost less, but ESA had a better understanding of what the project was, plus they included more reports that were required. Helix did not, and that's why we felt that ESA was the better choice, because they had a more comprehensive and they addressed the compressed schedule of the EIR. Therefore, our recommendation is to approve and authorize an agreement with ESA in the amount of $290,553 for the preparation of the EIR report for the Guest Road tank. And with that, I'll take any questions.
No, I just, well, just, this is the same one where we had the $10 million.
Yeah, Joe, you want to give
yeah, with the, with the guy that,
right
down below that he didn't like the, a tank in his backyard. And
we also have PGA out there contacting the residents there. And then this will be our first concrete tank.
Right, go ahead, Joe. So you might want to give a little background on that.
Yeah, because I don't think Steve was around when this went on.
So the one of the comment letters we received was from the adjacent neighbor. We had, through assistance from PGA, we held several meetings with the neighbor. We developed renderings that showed what the tank would look like. If you recall, this is a partially buried concrete tank, so we're able to landscape certain portions of the actual tank structure. As a result of those discussions, we did reduce the size of the tank from 13.4 million down to 8 million. That allows us to move the tank further away from the property line. There will not be any shade projected upon the property. That was part of the analysis that Al spoke to. We looked at different seasonal conditions. So we believe this is a project that has, to a large extent, considered the comments we received to date. Having said that, the EIR process is recommended, and we believe ESA is the right firm, given the potential for a challenge down the road.
Okay. Frankly, I could never understand why the guy didn't want to have his house shaded by the tank.
Yeah, dead of summer, I would love it.
Yeah. So. But nonetheless, we are doing
so we'll still have a job to do, probably.
Yes.
Talking about his comments.
And there will be outreach.
And there will be some outreach. To the other neighbors.
Yeah.
Terrific. Okay. With that, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with the record and Slauson absent.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Update on the state, regional, and local.
Well, we still have the budget workshop.
Oh, the budget. We're trying to go by. Yeah. Numbers are always sparkling.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. This is our budget workshop number 3. Just by way of background, we have had a good series of workshops and discussions earlier part of this year, and we're getting closer, so we appreciate the board's interest and time, and we have a variety of topics to cover today. I'm going to go through this quickly on our agenda. We want to talk about our capital improvement plan. This is a 5-year plan. The biannual budget will be focusing on our projections for the next 2 years of what we're spending on our projects. We'll also go through our budget summary, our sources and uses of funds, kind of recaps for all of those figures at a higher level. And then there's a proposal draft budget book that's also part of the staff report. It has some more details come behind those budget summaries, so I encourage you to review those if you haven't already. And that is from the framework or executive summary of our budget. A comprehensive budget book will be coming for our meeting in June, which will include all the detail. It's almost a 100-page document. It has all the numbers from the bottom. This gives you a summary of those figures. And so I encourage you again to take a look at those. We'll also talk about our proposed rates for 2020 and 2021. Our prior Prop 218 notice results is with background, and use that as a framework for talking about our recommendations for our Prop 218 for this period. And then talk next steps. So if that works with the board, we can just dive right in. Let's talk about the capital improvement plan, and this again for a biannual budget. But we start by looking at a longer time frame. We have a 5-year CIP, and it's looked at two ways. There's one way is the funds in which the district is going to invest in the capital plan. Over the next 5 years, we project $399 million to be funded by the district, of which the first 2 years will be $155 million. Now, in addition to the district's funding, there's also external funded projects, which is funds that we receive from our successful outreach and successful award of grants, as well as other funds that are contributed as partnerships, such as LRP programs, Metropolitan, and others. So $62 million of projects funded externally. So that's a record for us. It's much to be proud of in the success that we have in our grant program. And in the next 2 years, we project $41 million of grant awards being received to help fund our projects. We'll talk about that as we go through these next few slides, specifically talk about water, sewer, recycled, and general. Before I do that, the graph here on slide 4 shows you a little about where this funds are being distributed between the different services. Like I just highlighted, the blue bar, the water segment, is the largest we've had in the last 5, maybe 10 years as a proportion of the CIP. The last 10 years, we've been focused on the sewer side with a lot of expansion of our systems or replacements of all of our programs. We're winding up the Temecula treatment plant soon, this month or next.
This year.
Yeah, so during this fiscal year, that'll be, you'll start seeing more of the project shifting proportionally higher on the water side for water reliability, our water, different water programs, our desalters and others. So you'll hear more about the water side on our capital plan. You'll also be hearing more about that on our grant request. So I think that's another interesting thing to look at is our CIP shifts and our budget shifts as well. So going into water, slide 5, the top 5 capital improvement projects represent probably $48 million, almost half of the CIP for water, with the Paris 2 desalter being our largest project. It's roughly $24 million for the next 2 years is the district's portion of the funding of that program. Mind you, this is over $80 million project, of which roughly half of it is funded with external money. So it's a fantastic source of supply.
available in our local area, and it's being paid for half of it by other with other people's money, and that gives us a great return on our investment for our contributions of $24 million in the next 2 years. Our other projects, obviously, we have a diverse set of projects. This is probably the broadest array of projects I've seen in our CIP. There's more than 140 projects, distinct projects. So we're serving the entire service area across the board. Pipelines, pump stations, tank projects, as we just talked about in our last item. But as you can see, a big focus on the desalters in year one, but we have a variety of other projects in the pipeline and tank sewer tractors here. We also have the kickoff on the purified water replenishment treatment plant. About $3 million is a top five candidate. So we have a robust set of projects in the water side, but we find it very manageable from a funding standpoint. We came with grant funding for a portion. The district also has reserves that are on are ready for funding. We also have bond proceeds that are available for funding these programs. So this is a CIP that's been planned for, and we have funding available at this point. Going into our capital improvement plan for sewer, this list of projects for our top five is about $20 million, or 40% of the sewer CIP. For the 2 years, it's roughly $46 million. And our largest project is our lower electrification program, around $7.5 million. And, so you can see here, smaller dollar projects, but a wide array of projects. Enhance our and make betterments to our sewer system across the board in all service areas. The recycled water program, our top five CIP projects represents almost 80% of our CIP, about $11 million. The largest project, almost half of our recycled CIP, is the Temecula Valley Recycled Water Pipeline, almost $7 million over the next 2 years. Again, expanding upon the reliability of our recycled water program in the southern area of our service area, providing that reliability and also giving capacity for us as we expand our treatment plant. So this has been a funded project as well that's been received a lot of grant funding. So this is our portion of our funding. The remainder of this over $15 million project is funded from external funds through the state and other programs. So, really successful project from a financial perspective with a lot of partnership.
Charles, come back for a second.
Sure.
Can you walk me through the French Valley project on here?
Joe.
So this is to continue to expand our purple pipe efforts with retrofits and expansion of the purple pipe irrigation system to
So that's basically going to some of the parks, the green belt. Okay, I just want to make sure.
We did a first phase of that.
Yeah.
You're familiar with Sheffield Park, was it?
Yes.
The first phase. And included in the first phase, we had identified a second phase, and that's what this is.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Thank you. Appreciate that. That's included. Thank you, Charles.
Great. That's why it's a workshop. We get to work through it.
Yeah.
So next one is our general facilities. This is our CIP budget, which includes a variety of other assets that we're managing and administering. It's roughly 5%, a little less than 5% of our CIP in total. So our main projects, so the total for the next 2 years is about $6.6 million. It includes our headquarter building renovation project, which is enhancing the workspace here in our administrative facility. It has our OMC Gate 5 improvements, our OMC lab modifications, which are underway, and corrosion protection improvements district-wide, and clean service C&G retrofit. So again, collectively about $6.6 million, about $3.3 million on average each year, less than 5% of our total CIP. This continues to modernize and enhance our administrative as well as general facilities for the service of our customers. So with that, that completes my summary of the CIP. Again, the staff report has some other graphics for you to see the CIP, and we'll also have some more detail for you when we bring back the budget books in June.
Any questions on any other element of the CIP at this point?
I would add there are other projects that are
partially or entirely funded with either external funding or, in the case of the solar project, which the board approved last time or in the last board meeting, it's not listed on here because that ultimately will be fully funded by the PPA or project partnership agreement or power purchase agreement. So that's why you don't see that project under the general project, although it is a significant investment that we're making, but it's funded by the PPA.
Good. Thanks, Jeff. Okay. Terrific. Well, why don't I move ahead then? We have our next section is our biannual budget summary, our sources and uses of funds. So our preliminary biannual budget funding sources are reflected here for 2020, roughly $407 million. In 2021, roughly $430 million. Our revenues are projected to increase by an average of 7% in 2020 and 2021. And our revenue drivers include a higher water demand relative to our current fiscal year, a lot of new connections as we continue to expand the service area, our rate adjustments, and additional interest income as we've had higher interest rates, for the next 2 years than we've seen in the past, past biennial budget. So this is the breakdown of our sources of funds we talked about in our earlier workshops. These charts just reflect that the larger portion of our revenues are coming from our operating revenues. That's roughly $262 million next year from operating our water, sewer, and recycled water services, projected to grow to $275 million. And then the remainder are our debt, our connection fees, our interest income, and our property taxes. That's our main components, and where these funds will be going is into our expenditure category, which is shown on slide 11. So again, $406 million in funds to be used in 2020, as well as $430 million in 2021. Our operating expenses are projected to increase roughly by 4%, and our most significant increases are in our CIP, our debt service, our other post-employment benefits, or OPEB, and our purchased water costs because of the changes of demand. So these numbers are summarized here. They're also in line with what we talked about in our very first workshop. We projected with certain parameters. We've since then, with the input of the board as well as working with all of our staff, we rolled up from the ground up all of the figures from all of the departments, all of our services, our CIP, our budgets for our other post-employment benefits and others. When we rolled them all up, they came out with these tables. They're very much in line with what we had projected in our second workshop. So we're pleased to see that they're coming together in line with our initial recommendations. So on slide 12, then, we come to our preliminary budget operation summary, as well as some summaries of our rate adjustments that we're recommending. Our operating expenses are to begin to increase roughly by 4% over the next 2 years. But we want to remind the board that the operations components don't only fund our direct operating expenses, but they also contribute for other obligations, including our operating fixed assets, our other post-employment benefits, our replacement reliability capital projects in the CIP, and the district's debt service. So we feel that we have a comfortable level of revenues to help them contributing to funding these other obligations. So with that, we are continuing to recommend, as we had in our last workshop, these levels of rates adjustments for the next 2 years. And that includes water rates at a 3% annual commodity rate increase, a 90 cent per month successive increase in the fixed charges for fiscal year 20 and 21, and continue on with our ag and ID 24 rate escalations for the multi-year transition. And we'll talk more about that as I see slides on these. On the sewer, 3.8% annual increase in rates for 2020 and 2021. And finally, for recycled water, we're recommending a 7% annual increase in our rates. So that's our summary of our recommendations. I have a whole section to talk about these in detail. Why don't I just dive right into that? So our next slides are on the water side. We talked about this with the administrative team last week about our projections, our proposed rates. We had a good discussion, and we'll talk about some of the inputs that you had in Prop 18 slides. But for these slides, these are pretty much just summarizing what our actual rates are today, as well as what we're proposing for next year and the following year. Just by way of background, for our budget-based tiered rates, we have these for our residential customers, and we've created these rates such that the folks that stay within their budgets are going to stay within their Tier 1 and Tier 2 rates. As you can see, the Tier 1 rates are substantially lower than those that are in the Tiers 3 and 4, which are those which are being wasteful and exceeding their budgets. And so we've had this graduating tier for some time now. We're not recommending any changes to our tiered structure or to our budget allocation phases. We're just adjusting the rates to recover our costs associated with our commodities and then recover our fixed charges on the daily service charge. So we're recommending a 4.6% increase, 3% increase in our commodity rate per year to recover our operating cost increases over the next couple of years. So these numbers reflect those changes. It's roughly 3 cents per billing unit or CCF on Tier 1, about 10 cents a CCF for Tiers 2 per each year. And then the adjustments to Tiers 3 and 4 reflected here in the table. Before we move on, see if you have any questions about these recommendations. No? Great. So then our next slide, we have our residential bottled water fixed charge summary. This is our monthly fixed charge. Our daily service charge is currently 42 cents for our residents. And then we have an additional charge, which is our water supply reliability capital projects fee. We're recommending an increase of 90 cents per year in increased fixed charge, which is the monthly charge for those residents. So an increase of 90 cents per month is what's being reflected in that changes per month column or row at the bottom. So when you go from our current rate on average of $16.20 per month, we're recommending going to $17.10 per month in 2020, and then that was up to $18 a month in 2021. And then I have a graph in a moment that will show a little bit about these fixed charges. We think that they're reasonable, and they're on their way to helping us recover our fixed costs. But they're still providing our customers a benefit of conservation initiatives and other objectives of the board when providing a affordable way for customers to pay for their water. So just to illustrate a little about what
I have a question. Sure. Is this for ACF or is this for meter?
So this is our current fixed charge on the daily service charge is per EMS. We call it equivalent meter size. So up to a 3/4 inch meter is going to be charged at this 44 inch.
So this is the 5/8 and the 3/4.
5/8 and 3/4.
Okay, that's just an average.
And then we take an AWA standard index that we incorporate into our
piece. But on the typical residential monthly bill, they would see this as the 1620 currently is the fixed charge. That would go to 1710 if approved by the board in 2020 and $18 in 2021.
Okay.
And approximately 90% of our customers would be on this, would be billed this way. Great. So just to illustrate a little bit about our proposals and what does that impact for our existing customers. The typical single-family residential water bill would increase by $2.19 per month next year and $2.21 the following year. So this graph is to show that what the components are. So the daily service charge, again, is the dark blue. Our capital fee is the light blue. Our Tier 1 component of our bill would be green. And our Tier 2 component of our commodities is in the purple. So you can see about 3.6% increase in their monthly bill, again, about $2 a month for each successive year. So we again have seen that we've moderated our adjustments over time. We continue to try to stay the course and being able to have level or reasonable adjustments to people's their impacts of their bills. And we think that with these types of adjustments, we help stabilize our fixed revenue, but at the same time not have a significant increase on people's monthly bills. So going past the residential, we also have our other rate recommendations on slide 17. We have our proposed demand at retail rates. The background, 8 years ago, we began a phase-in from an adjusted agricultural rate, and that rate was based off of earlier established programs that were no longer in effect. So the board instructed staff to move forward with an 8-year transition. And we've been successfully adjusting that rate to bring in all of the potable demand customers onto one standard rate. So we're in the last year of that 8-year transition, so we're recommending to close that gap in 2020. So you can see here the demand ag retail customer is currently at $1,290 per acre foot. That compared to a domestic customer is at $1,316 per acre foot. There's roughly $26 differential in their rates. What we're recommending is we would recommend the demand ag retail rate would be at parity with the domestic. We're recommending the domestic increases to $1,355 per acre foot, and we would do the same with the demand ag retail, make them at $1,355 per acre foot. That's a $65 increase for those customers. I think going forward, they would just be at the same rate. And that's what's happening in 2021. They go up by $39. So that's my quick summary of an 8-year transition plan. But I think this is helps us get complete that, close off this transition, and it'll have a very small impact. Same impact for all customers going forward in 2021. Now, in addition, we also have another transition plan which was established for our Fruitvale rates and for the Fruitvale ag rates specifically. We're recommending a continuous 7-year transition plan. This multi-year transition started 2 years ago. The current increases are also based on directives from the board that we would not increase by more than 10%. So we're recommending we would stay below the 10% threshold for the rate increases. It would be $72 per acre foot in 2020 and $80 an acre foot in 2021. So these numbers will eventually also come in parity with the other agricultural rates for the next 7 years. So that concludes my recommendations on the water rates.
Any question on the water side?
Terrific. Mm-hmm. I'll move forward into the sewer. I just have one slide on our proposed sewer rates. As I mentioned earlier, we're proposing a 3.8% annual increase in our sewer daily service charge each year in 2020 and 2021. The table here in slide 20 shows those daily charges for each of the blocks that we have for our residential customers. So just, again, this little background on it, that we do have blocks. The blocks are provided for residents that have fewer people in their home or given a discount to their monthly bill. For people of one or two people in their home, they're in block one. That rate is actually 60% of the block two rate. So currently that's 54 cents a day, compared to a 90 cents per day in block two, which is three or four people in their home. And the reason for that is just we've done some calibration studies that show that the flows coming from those smaller homes is smaller, less impact on our treatment, and therefore we can provide them a lower price for their service. And then the homes that have more people, they're providing a greater load into our facilities. We charge a higher rate for them. And that's where we have blocks three and block four. You can see those rates are higher than our blocks two and one. So we're recommending just a 3.8% increase across the board on all of those rates. And we continue to keep the structure though in place with our block factors for our residents that are on tiered water rates. Any questions on our sewer? Terrific. So then we just want to pull all our recommendations together and illustrate for the benefit of the board the impacts for a few customer types. On slide 22, we want to show what would be the impact for a Sun City resident that is block one customer. Again, a block one customer being one or two people in their home. In this case, the current bill is roughly $71 a month. Where our recommendations, it would increase to roughly $73.55. That's a 3.4% increase. and then the following year be going to 76.44 cents. That's an average increase of 3.7% over 2 years. So for the residents who are staying within their budgets, a lower demand, and have fewer residents, their bill impact is minimal on a percentage and a dollar basis. Now going to a customer who has a larger home and has more demand, this is a representative from Moreno Valley Block 2 customer. Their current bill would be roughly $90.87. It is based on 15 CCF per month. And the recommendations would bring that to $93.73 in 2020 and $97.35 in 2021. That's on average an increase of 3.5% over 2 years. So in this case, we can show in two examples a lower demand customer or more of an average or typical customer. The impacts are relatively the same, even though we have the diversity of types of rate structures for our customers. I hope that this helps illustrate that by having a diverse rate structure, we're able to moderate proposed rate increases for customers and still affect the messaging of conservation and illustrate for customers that they need to serve, they're able to keep their monthly bills low. So to the spirit of talking about low rates, we do like to show that our rates are affordable relative to other neighboring agencies. This graph on 24 is showing a most recent comparison of average water bills for customers, a little higher on the demand, 18 CCF. But we have to do this to compare historically as well. Our ranges are much lower. We're at $102 per month in 2019. And this is including all of our water and sewer charges. We broke out this year the dark blue component, which is our fixed charge. So you can see where we're showing EMWD 2019, this dark blue component is below nearly all of the other agencies' dark blue line. And that's because they've increased their fixed charge components substantially. Several of them are in the 40, coming closer, in some cases, over $50 a month just on their water fixed charge. That, by comparison to ours, is around $18 in 2 years. So we feel that we provide our customers some affordability. If they want to conserve, their bill will come down. But at the same time, we're covering our costs for our fixed components by providing some capital relief or capital fixed charge for our CIP. Also, just want to illustrate overall our overall bill relative to some of our other neighboring agencies is also very affordable compared to Lake Hemet as well as in Western and the city of Hemet. So we think our customers recognize that our rates are affordable relative to their adjacent agencies. So our next section is on proposed rates for recycled water. In our last workshop, we talked a little about recycled water and its and the benefits of this system and our rates being advantageous for our customers. Just want to reiterate that there are a lot of advantages to the recycled water system, and we try to reflect that in our rates and providing reasons for our customers to move on to the recycled water system. Our proposed rates still stay very affordable compared to our potable rates. And we do have a variety of rate structures for recycled water so that we can provide a reliable distribution of our water and have demands throughout the year. But this graph here just wants to illustrate that the trend has been that our potable water is continuing to escalate as well as our recycled water. But our recycled water is extraordinarily affordable relative to the alternatives of potable. We broke out the categories of the potable being almost, well, going towards $1,400 an acre foot in 2021. That compared to under $600 for the non-ag recycled water customers in this gray bar. So you can see these customers are paying less than half the rate of their potable rate. So if we move more customers off of potable demand, they're going to get half the rate of their current charge. So great incentive for customers to move towards recycled water. But in addition to that, our ag summer rates are shown in the purple line. You can see that they're below the $200 per acre foot, close to $150 per acre foot. And still attracting this customer base to use water and manage it throughout the year. And we also have a winter rate, which also incentivizes during the winter period when it's heavy rains. You still have an availability of recycled water at a very appealing price. It helps put off pressure on storage. So So we want to illustrate that because on next slide we talk about our recommendations for the rates. We are proposing adjustments of a 7% increase for the commodity rates over the next 2 years. As I mentioned, though, we feel our rates are very affordable for our customer classes. Our Axoma rates will still be coming, our recommendations to add about $10 per acre foot. And we get $162 an acre foot in 2021. And our last time when we did our cost of service study 2 years ago, we talked about options for some of these customer classes. And one of them was to do pumping and use our own wells. By that time, we're around $200 an acre foot with our cost to do the pumping. We feel that this rate is still offering our second water customers a more affordable option than going this way in summertime, continuing to use this as their primary source of water for ag demand. And then our non-ag customers, there was a question about this $520 an acre foot and the impact of escalating this in our proposed 7% increase. So what we've done is we've done some research on that, did some analysis on Slide 28 of our non-ag customers. Just some background on this, they purchase less than 4,000 acre feet a year, but it's split roughly 50-50 between institutional accounts and non-institutional accounts. Institutions being Valley-wide, Moreno Valley, some other school districts and cities, whereas the non-institutions are typically the golf courses and other HOAs and other non-institution accounts. Our proposed 7% increase for the non-ag is going to have a projected increase of about $145,000 to $155,000 revenue to the district in 2020 and 2021, respectively. We think that as much as that's a 7% number seems somewhat sizable, we feel that the impact of this availability to all of these customers provides them an incentive because the rate is lower than the current rate. Again, more than half off relative to their potable rate. A lot of these customers moved over to this rate for that reason. And we think that this additional $145,000 is actually a lower impact than had they been on the potable and had an escalation on the potable side. And so we do summarize here to look into those accounts and what their projected impact would be or increases. But again, we do recommend this because it's still a very affordable way for them to irrigate their area. And then finally, on recycled water, there was a question about some in-loop recycled water, particularly our rate 693. A little background on this one was this goes back to our independence of the stipulated judgment, which became effective in 2013. But before that time, while the basin was being adjudicated, two property owners agreed in 2008 to limit their groundwater pumping from their private wells and in lieu purchase recycled water from EMWD. Now, in consideration for the limiting of their groundwater pumping, EMWD agreed to sell the recycled water at a special rate, which is this rate 693, for 30 years. The 693 rate is currently $82.89 per acre foot, and the agreement requires that we adjust those rates equal to the change in the CPI inflationary index, which is what we're recommending for the next 2 years. For 2020 and 2021. So that's a little bit of background about how we created this rate for our second customer, our customers on this rate.
And it's basically the ag winter rate.
And it is the ag winter rate is where we started with this rate structure.
So they're getting theirs raised by CPI and not by the 7%.
That's correct.
Per the agreement.
Per the agreement.
So how many acre feet does that generally represent?
It can vary. It's a 5,000 acre feet between the two accounts.
Generally, close to 5,000 to 6,000 acre feet a year. So it's a big use.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. It's probably worth it because we kind of jam some of that water down the... some of the farmers just to get a recycled water program.
Well, it's also they're leaving the water basically in the groundwater basin, and there's a benefit to the groundwater basin by not having to purchase replenishment water to replace that.
Right.
So it essentially is kind of, I look at it as the discount, if you will, is a cheap form of replenishment water for us, essentially.
Because they're not pumping the high quality
water. Correct. So it's an in lieu. They're leaving that water into the ground.
Right.
Question for Joe. How deep is water there in those areas where Scott and Bert water?
It varies. I would have to look at recent records to determine what the depth is currently.
Okay. What's the specific question, Director Crona, in terms of
what's groundwater level? What's the depth at which
the groundwater
pumping from, or what Eastern's pumping from?
Let us.
I'm just wondering if, as far as the cost, the comparison of the cost to pump the groundwater versus. Yeah, I don't know that that has anything to do with the reasons for Eastern wanting the water, but
it's more of a benefit. Yeah, it's more of a benefit to them because they're not that deep. I didn't think Bert's wells out there were below 300 feet, and I think we're pumping at 600-800 feet. If I remember right.
Yeah, but there's no aquitards in that basin. That water goes. I mean, there's no clay lenses that are isolating that. That water goes right to the bottom of the basin. So,
I would add another very important consideration of why that program was put in place is that we're actually seeing a reversal of the underground aquifer flowing from high school and area in Nuevo back towards the high-quality groundwater in San Jacinto. So that was another consideration as to why that program was put in place, was to stop that reversal of underground water.
Creates a mound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
But we'll find the information out.
All right. Yeah.
Okay, great. So our next section is our Proposition 218 Notice and Outreach Form 2017. So just a little bit of our history. In 2017, the board authorized the delivery of a Prop 18 notices. We then mailed out over 230,000 Prop 18 notices to the property owners in the district. We held our public hearing in November and received 17 different protests, or 0.007% of our property owners submitted any written protests. So we thought that was successful in the sense that we didn't have protests, but we were also very pleased, though, that we did an extensive outreach to our customers and ensure that they knew about what we were doing or proposing. We supplemented our 218 notices with emails, roughly 65,000 accounts received emails notifying them from our public hearing and what we were intending to do. And in addition, we had web banners on EWG.org that guided our customers to learn more about our rates and our proposals. And we also have an invoice calculator or bill calculator on our website so customers can pull up their own personal information and look at their own data and look at their properties to see what the impact would be of the proposal. So that we thought that was very successful last time at doing, and so we're recommending to the same for this year's process. We would go out and do similar email blasts, notifications, and web page enhancements to point people to learn more about what we're recommending. But with our Proposition 218 notices, we're to stay on schedule with our June 19 proposed adoption of the budget and rates. We do need to mail those out 45 days in advance, so we're asking to mail those out in May. And so we have before you five Prop 218 notices for your review, and requesting you approve those so that we can get those mailed out in May. So just a quick summary of those. We have those five. There's residential. There's a non-residential, there's agriculture, recycle, and then there's our Fruitvale ID24 water sewer rates. So those are all broken out in their specific details. We've broken into five different components. It gets confusing when you aggregate them into one big book. And we customize each of those 218 so that it's crafted specifically to that audience. And the notices do include all the requisites of a 218 notice, including a public hearing date, the proposed rates, and a little bit of background on our water budgets, our sewer block structure, and a little bit about our drought stages. And we put that in there not just to provide additional content, but we feel it's very important for us to have on the record for our customers an ability to understand their rates and how does it create a bill. The Prop 218 the recent challenges to any Prop 218 notice or any proposed rates has really been on the ability to understand the rates and how one can pass on costs to create a bill. So what we've done is we've actually architected that into some of the scripted language so the person could actually create their bill if they wanted to work through the numbers and do that. So not only in our cost of service study do we have it, but we also have it in our Prop 218 notice. So we think that's very helpful in the defense of our recommendations of our rates and the adoption of those rates if we go to a public hearing. We have confidence that our constituents have all the information that they need.
I think it's also important, as we saw during the Governor Brown's mandate for our 25% consumption reduction in consumption as part of the drought in 2015 and 16, when we implemented the water shortage contingency plan. The water shortage contingency plan is based on our manipulation of the budgets and elimination of a rate. So while we weren't changing a rate per se during that, it was a Proposition 218 item where we changed the allocations. So by including that in this, were we to go into a water shortage again and we needed to implement the water shortage contingency plan, it would give us the flexibility to make those changes in the allocations and to eliminate, for example, the Tier 3 rate and go right into Tier 4, which is in one of our stages, without having to do a new Proposition 218 notice. So that's why we continue to include that. Not that we want to have that situation again, but just in case.
Great. Thanks, Paul. So as I mentioned, we have our draft Proposition 218 notices, and I just want to share that last week we did share with the Administrative Committee, and we are now distributing for the board. But we send them out by email to the board April 9th. And reviewed on the 11th, the Administrative Committee. We have made some revisions based on the feedback, including changing the invitation to attend. We could say you're invited to attend our public hearing. Specify the type of rate being noticed on the front. There's a lot of different ones that kind of look similar, so we actually put it specifically as a, like for this example, residential rates public hearing is written in the blue box, the notice section. And we corrected the wording in the EMWD throughout stages section to reflect stage 4 or 5 titles from the administrative code. And then we amended the notices included in the agenda packet. So those are the changes that we've made in the committee discussion last week. So before we move on to our next steps, let me see if there's any feedback you have about our proposed Prop 218 notices or our rates.
Nope. How long is the next one?
How long is the next which?
Presentation. 5 minutes or 20?
I will go as fast as
we can take a break. It's whatever you want.
No, we
want to hear all of it.
We're at the finish line.
Okay, you're at the finish line? Okay.
Yeah, the next slide could be seconds. So,
all right.
So slide 37, we're there, we're at the finish.
Okay. Charles is saying, in closing.
We're asking for the board to approve these items before that. Our next step is to mail the Prop 218 notices out, come back to 19 to hold a public hearing, and then we would be asking the board to adopt our budget and adopt our rates and make this effective January 1.
And just for the board's clarification, for clarification of the board, what's in the Proposition 218 notices are the rates and charges that are reflected in this budget presentation. The board has the option with those Proposition 218 notice to approve those rates or something less than those rates. You can't approve something more than those rates without reissuing another Proposition 218 notice.
Great. So our requested action today is to approve and authorize the final drafts of the Prop 218 notices of public hearing to distribute the publications of the Prop 218 notices and public hearing and the schedule of the public hearing and for proposed water, sewer, and recycled water rates at 9 a.m. on June 19th.
Right. And we will do the public outreach that we mentioned, the email blasts and the supplemental information on the website regarding that June 19th hearing.
With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
I just want to say, Charles, thank your team and April and her team have done a fantastic job putting all this together, and I think the 218 notice looks great, and so nice work. I just want to say nice work on it.
Yes, absolutely.
We appreciate it, and they do get all the credit. They did all the work. I was standing there.
Just stand there and look good.
Yeah. I'll get all your guys waiting.
Okay.
With that, Mr. President, I'll make a motion to approve the item.
Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Slauson absent. Let's take a break.
Thank you.